downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Vieni, c'è una strada nel bosco, il suo nome conosco, puoi conoscerlo tu. Vieni, è la strada del cuore, dove nasce l'amore. Che non moria più, la gui tra gli alberi, intrecciato coi rami in fior, giù ogni de semplice, come sogna il tuo cuor. Oh, vieni, giù una strada nel bosco, il suo nome conosco, puoi conoscerlo tu. Qui tra gli alberi, intrecciato coi rami in fior, giù un nido semplice, come sogna il tuo cuor. Oh, vieni, giù una strada nel bosco, il suo nome conosco, puoi conoscerlo tu.
Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm your host, Amanda, and this is Reciprocity Radio. Sorry for that little technical blip there. It's always hard when you're playing things off YouTube videos, but that was a very funny song from Enrico Montesano called Buon Appetito, and the music video featured models walking around in bathing suits and high heels that had giant bowls of pasta on their head. It was not real pasta, but it's very entertaining. And the song you heard before that was Jens Lechman with La Strada nel Bosco, which is The Street in the Forest, one of my favorite Italian tunes. So yeah, this is Reciprocity Radio, and I'm your host, Amanda. This is a show about cooking, eating, drinking, recipes, sharing food, eating together, all that kind of stuff. And I'm here every Sunday at 5 on Radio Free Brooklyn. And yeah, today's episode, if you haven't guessed, is about pasta and Italian food. So I'm pretty excited to get into this. And yeah, I have spent a lot of last week making pasta. It just sort of happened. I hurt my back last weekend, so I had to do a lot of resting, and I'm not good at that. So I got very bored. I also don't have a working TV, which is pretty much okay, but that's kind of like what you do when you're on bed rest and you have like a, you know, your heating pad and stuff, and you're kind of sat up on a Netflix show with like six seasons. I can do that on my laptop, but I really, you know, I don't have like the attention span for it. So I was like bored at home, and I couldn't really do my work that I normally do because I can't lift things. So I was like, what can I do? I recently had purchased a scale, like a cooking scale, to do measurements and things, because I have a Chemex, which is a type of thing to brew coffee in. It almost looks like a giant beaker because it is kind of laboratory equipment. It's laboratory grade equipment. You can basically set it on fire, but you don't need to do that. So I make coffee with the Chemex, and I hand grind my beans and like measure the temperature of the water and weigh the beans and all that stuff. And then I realized, oh, the other thing that you can really use a scale for outside of like making coffee or baking or, you know, anything I guess you need it for, but something that really benefits from it is weighing for pasta. A lot of times it's not like a cup and a half, it's like 500 grams of this type of flour. So I realized I could start doing that, and I was like, well, I have flour and I have eggs, so like, why not? I don't have anything else to do. I'm literally stuck here on bed rest and just kind of icing and heating my back and repetition. So I got really into pasta making. And this isn't the first time I've done that. I wasn't really into it a couple years ago. I actually have a pasta rolling machine at home, and I already had that. So I was kind of like all set to go, basically. I even had some semolina flour around from another project. So I was pretty psyched. And my first pass was decent, and then I knew it could be better, so changed flours, started weighing instead of measuring, and got better and better, and kept trying weirder and weirder things. So I'm really excited to share with you about that. So this is not an uncommon topic here for me. If you know the show Reciprocity Radio, or if you know anything about my background, I studied abroad in Italy. I studied Italian language for about 2 or 3 years. So I have a really strong affinity for the food, for the language, for the culture, even though I have no blood relation to Italians. And I've done shows on Reciprocity Radio for covering pizza, covering Negronis, even covering wine. So it was only a matter of time to do pasta, I think. And not only pasta, but I've really been wanting for a long time to do kind of a whole arc of episodes about foods that are like pockets of foods, like pierogies, pilmini, ravioli, gyoza, empanadas, soup dumplings, and so on. These are often sort of a poor man's food in every culture, and they're cheap, and they're delicious, and they are just like really easy to make, usually, and they don't require a lot. Usually, some doughs don't even require eggs, so you really just need your grain and your water, and then the filling, a little bit goes a really long way, which is kind of incredible. So you end up with something that is more than the sum of its parts, in a sense. You end up with something magical when you stuff, you know, cheese or meat inside of a dough pocket, or, you know, filling, dumpling, whatever you want to call it. So that's something I also want to focus on in the long run, but we'll definitely be talking about it here today because I made ravioli this week several times, and I've long been meaning to tell you guys about the gyoza that I make. That will be coming soon. I also made empanadas today, so I've been filling a lot of things, filling a lot of pockets of dough with delicious stuff. And that recipe will be coming too. I was at a potluck before this, so if I seem a little harried, it's because I came from like a crowded but exciting place with a lot of really good food. And it was a blast, but I'm excited. And I get to go back after this, so that'll be nice too. But yeah, pasta. It seems, I would say, very intimidating to at first because you're like, oh, I'm going to make it. But it's not. It's actually really, really easy. And my whole goal with testing and retesting and writing recipes is to really make it seem like a thing you could do on a weeknight, because it's not so bad. And if you have the patience and time to let it rest, you know, roll it out and all that stuff, then you're like, you could be good to go in under an hour, you know, if you time it right. So I've been pretty into eating. Like, pretty much, I think I had a slice of pizza on Friday, and it was the first thing that I ate all week that I hadn't actually made myself from scratch. So that was a pretty interesting feeling, and I was kind of amazed. And the pizza was very good, but I was like, oh wow, this is the first thing I have I'm like actually cooked for myself or made the entirety of. And that just happens that when I get bored, I really like go throw myself into cooking. So anyway, I have a lot of really great clips. I have a lot of really great recipes. Something I do want to mention right now, right off the top of the show, if you've never heard Reciprocity Radio, it does have a companion website. It has recipes, it has all the previous episodes, it has a blog post, it has everything. And I updated some stuff today, and there'll be more recipes coming this week. But on the blog section of reciprocityradio.com, I put up some ruminations on making pasta, which I will talk to you about in just a second. I also put up some two really cool recipes that I found today. I was kind of looking for archival footage, basically like old cooking shows like Julia Child and other people making pasta, famous chefs, things so I could kind of get some really fun clips, which I did find a lot of really great things. But I also found this like really interesting series with Chef Jason Stoneburner on PBS, and it's called like Other People's Ideas. But they're basically showing you just little like 3-minute video of like a really interesting, from like grain and water to full product pasta making techniques. And these are two things I'd never seen before. I also had noticed that this chef is apparently famous for pasta. I've never been to the Stoneburner restaurant, which is in Seattle, but this chef is known for his pasta, and both those that were demonstrated on the show don't require any eggs. So if you have any vegan friends or you want to avoid eggs or whatever, these are really interesting options. I think I'm really excited to make both. I've never seen either of these folds before, so I put those on reciprocityradio.com/blog. One is, it's called Colorgioni. Every time I say a new, I was saying this out loud earlier when I was spelling it, and every time I say a new like pasta name, I feel like Lilo in, in that movie, Lilo Dallas Multipass, and she's like saying her chicken and all this stuff. It's what it sounds like when I'm saying these pasta names. Colorigiones. It's like a really like fat braided ravioli with the folds. It kind of looks like a zipper. And the suggestion is to put like squash or mashed potatoes or like a hearty starchy thing in the filling, because it's kind of a big fat like stuffed thing. And you could serve like a meat sauce, or he had one with a sage butter and squash. Looked amazing. And this is all in like a 3-minute video. Shows you how to do it, and it was really great. Another one is loriguitas, which is sort of like a stretched and braided version of a pasta. So it's like a little braided loop. It almost looks like, you know, if you ever twist two hair ties together and they get kind of intertwined, that's how it looks. It looks like a really fun one to make. That's just flour and water. And you kind of just have to like pull the dough like you would like pull noodles. And I want to try that. I had to actually stop myself. I was like, I really want to make this like right now for lunch. And it would have been doable. So I hope you'll check these out. I love sharing stuff online that I found. That's easy. It's great. I mentioned something earlier when I said gyoza or like dumplings, things that are like, it's very small ingredients, but they come together to be more than what they really are at face value. More than the sum of the ingredients. I tried something last week that was described just like that, and I won't post that video on my website for you too, but you can look it up yourself. I'm sure you might have seen this guy around if you're on Facebook. He's definitely got a good Facebook page with his videos. It's called Binging with Babish, and the premise of this show is that he is a chef, cook, and a cookbook author. who makes food from film and TV. So sometimes it's really ridiculous things, sometimes it's really amazing things, and sometimes it's really simple things. And I really love his show. He makes everything very approachable. His great voice. It's always very, like, easy to digest. And one of the things he made this, that for some reason I saw this week, was aglio e olio. It's garlic and oil pasta. It's a very simple 5-ingredient pasta dish. And it was featured in the movie Chef with John Favreau. Makes this for, you know, the woman he's trying to seduce in the movie. And of course it works because it's one of the best things you'll ever eat. And it's so simple that it is kind of startling. So I have a recipe for that coming up, and I will post the video for you that he did. It's super easy. It's like garlic that you saute in oil. You add chili peppers so that you take it off the heat. Add in your like al dente pasta with a little pasta broth and lemon juice, salt, pepper, and a good heavy hand of chopped fresh parsley. And it is truly like, it's unreal. It's more than some of its parts. And I was like, this looks good, but I can't taste that good. And my first bite was truly just like, I couldn't believe it. So I've made that probably 4 or 5 times this week. And it is actually what set me off making pasta from scratch again. Because I was like, I wonder how great this would be if I made like fresh linguine for it. And it was incredible. So I'm excited to share that. I also wrote on my website, reciprocityradio.com. Again, there are some really, these are my tips for how to make pasta, like what to do, not even how to make it, just like what you need to mentally, where you need to mentally be at before you begin the journey of pasta. So I will come tell you that in just a second. Right now we're going to go to a video of Gordon Ramsay making pasta, and we'll see how many times he swears. This is Reciprocity Radio. Thanks so much for listening. We were talking about pasta today and dumplings and all kinds of filled things. This is going to be a long arc of episodes about those kind of things. So thanks for listening, and I'll be right back after this clip.
The secret behind making good pasta is not allowing it to dry out, so you have to really move your ass.
Right, Stosie and Russell, let's go. First thing we have is a nice floured table.
Roll the pasta just to take a little bit of the sort of weight off the pasta machine. So we just get it a little bit thin so it starts to go through the machine, OK? And let the machine do the work. Every time it goes through the machine, it goes down a number. Yeah? Now to cut it. Fold it nice and neatly, but while we fold it, we just sprinkle it with flour. Here we go, up and round, and then from there. Nice long length, pasta. Look at where we are. You don't really want any longer than that because you've got to think of the customers pulling it from their bowl. So let's go there, shall we?
Okay.
Yeah? Take the telly, one piece through, back of the hand, in the machine. Yes? Up, and look, here it comes. It's almost like going to the hairdresser, isn't it? That nice fringe. Let those little bits dangle off and then dry on to there, yes? There we go. Let's go. Nice. Very nice. The most important thing about the presentation with the tagliatelle of mushrooms is get your tongue and twist the tagliatelle round so it almost shapes a really nice ball in the centre of the plate. Then get your wonderful sautéed mushrooms oozing of garlic and shallots, and just let them sort of fall on top of the tagliatelle. But the secret is to make sure the tagliatelle is not all broken up, just like that, nice and relaxed. Parmesan cheese on there, quickly.
Yes, chef.
Let's go, Stosie. Move over, that's it. Yep. No, there you go. Got to be on your toes in the kitchen, you know that?
Yes, chef.
Yeah, you're heavy-footed, like a little baby elephant running around. Clump, 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 clump. Go, table two, please. Go, 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 go.
So you can kind of get from, you know, it's Gordon Ramsay, probably not the best person to learn to make a patient thing from, but you get that it is actually incredibly simple, and the homemade aspect of the handmade pasta is just like, it adds a completely other dimension to eating it, even just accenting with garlic and olive oil and like some good Parmesan as you finish that dish with will really like transform. It's kind of insane. Like, I feel like I've been living a luxury life this week, and I've really just been, you know, making pasta. Now I have a ton of it that's frozen because it freezes quite well. So I have like three different types of ravioli that are frozen in my freezer now that I just made kind of out of curiosity, and it wasn't so bad, honestly. So I will tell you now what my tips are, my personal tips, and you can find this on reciprocityradio.com/blog. It's my tips for making pasta. Here are things I've learned in my time making pasta. With a lot of practice, what was once an intimidating and frustrating process has become something I can do pretty much regularly with ease, and even a process I look forward to. If you follow this advice, you'll be serving up a bowl of homemade goodness, stress-free, in no time. I mean, at least I hope so. So here's my first and number one thing, and it's very important, and you're going to laugh, but it's important. Don't start this process hungry, or even peckish, for that matter. There's a reason Italians are the masters of antipasto, or like little snacks. Do not get hangry during this process. It will ruin it for you, as it has for me many times. Pasta is ultimately a simple thing to make, and it is a process of patience. There is no rushing it, so don't let hunger pangs make you feel rushed yourself. Open some wine, set out some snacks, or better yet, get your prepping done earlier in the day. Pasta dough can rest for anywhere from 30 minutes to hours, so you can pretty much be ready in time whenever you need, if you make the dough or the filling, or if you're not even making a filling, you can make the dough in advance, just roll it out. It's very simple. And you do, yeah, you just, it's timing, it's just timing. Number two is things in place. Make sure you have everything organized and ready. Check that you have enough eggs, check that you have enough flour, check that your scale has batteries, check your olive oil. Homemade pasta cooks extremely fast. As James Beard writes in his book, Beard on Pasta, don't even think about putting your pasta into the water. It's into the cooking water, and if your sauce and garnishes are not ready to go. That goes for everything else in the meal. Homemade pasta is supposed to be served pretty much immediately and fresh, so make sure everything else is in order before you cook it, or even think about serving it to guests. So it's really going to be the last thing you do. And homemade pasta cooks pretty much as fast as like a minute and 30 seconds to like four if it's thick. So cooks fast, you sauce it pretty fast, like a minute in the sauce in the pan. So it's going to be the last thing you're going to do in the kitchen, and you should have everything else down and ready to go, cleared away, cleaned up, etc., etc., so that you can just sit down and enjoy what you've made. The third thing is practice makes perfect. This is supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be an evolving, experimental thing. You'll get the feel of it over time. You can't help but do that with a 10-minute kneading period, right? So relax, feel the dough, pay attention to its springiness and the color each time you make it. See how the environment, the process, the flour, the humidity, and whatever else may come your way change the final outcome. Note the difference between a dough with eggs and a dough that's made with warm water. This is how you'll develop a good sense of when a dough is right, with or without the guidelines. And finally, remember, it's just a little bit of flour and water, or flour and some eggs. If you don't get it right the first time, at least you're not losing a ton of expensive ingredients in the process. Just have fun. So those are my tips. That's what I've learned personally. Not to take it too seriously. You're really going to start to feel things with your hands and know instinctively when things are right after you've taken some practice here. I also put up some suggestions, things to help you. Cooking, number one, definitely is a scale. I kind of find that to be perfect, and it's something that's going to make your life easier in other cooking aspects anyway. So you may, whether it's coffee or you're making, you know, a baked good and you need grams or whatever, I love having one right now. It's great, and I got mine for like $10 on Amazon. It's by Greater Goods products company. So they do a lot of like environmental and charity work, so it was a good purchase. Something I've seen a lot of chefs use, but I don't actually have, is a pastry scraper. That's supposed to be very good for cutting together your dough after you've kind of done the well stage with the eggs or water. I don't have one, and I've gotten by, but I think it would be nice, so I'll probably pick one up. I own a pasta roller, but you don't have to have one. There are a lot of recipes out there that don't require it. I find it to be a very satisfying thing to own, and I love making ravioli, and it makes that very easy because it makes the dough very thin and uniform, but you don't have to do that. But if you look up pasta rollers on Amazon, or maybe check in your local cooking supply store, it's a really worthwhile investment. I feel like this thing is going to last me the rest of my life, so however much I spent. I think I looked up the one I owned and it was like $50. It's going to be in my life forever. It's like a really well-made stainless steel, beautiful product that's easy to move around. It has an adjustable clamp that you can put on different surfaces. So I think well worth it. If you have a KitchenAid, you can get an attachment to that that will run on the motor and can roll out the pasta for you. So that's also a really great thing if you have a KitchenAid. I don't actually have space for a KitchenAid, so I don't have one, but someday in the future I will consider. The other thing I got the other day at my local cooking supply store was a, like, kind of looked like a pizza cutter, but it had two sides. One is kind of ribbons and the other is straight, and it's like a pastry or ravioli wheel. This is like a little thing that will cut the pasta, especially if you're making shapes. Like, my favorite one right now is agnolotti. So I use the pastry roller, and it cuts really quickly and cleanly, and it makes a little like crimped shape along the edges. So you end up with a pretty cuts, and it also just doesn't stick very much, so your pasta cuts clean and you can press the edges closed so nothing comes out. So those are the four things I say you should get. Obviously, a good rolling pin is a really useful thing to have. In Italy, the rolling pins that Nonna or like traditionally used would be sort of a thin, like 2-inch, like really, really beautiful, well-made wooden rolling pin that's very long. That's the traditional one. So I don't have one of those. And I heard this joke somewhere. I can't remember where in my research just came up, but it was like, it's modeled after a broom handle because that's probably what they were using. I think that was on salt, fat, acid, heat, which I'm going to tell you about that now, actually, because it was so good. I haven't even finished it yet. But there's this new show on Netflix. If you have Netflix, it's called Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, and it stars Salmon Nosrat. She is just like the most, like, I don't know, most appealingly lovely host. She makes you feel like she's your friend and she's just like with you on this trip to kind of look at all these things, like including the first episode was fats. So they were talking about like olive oil being pressed fresh from olives and Parmesan wheels and all kinds of really great things. So she's really fun to watch and I look forward to finishing that series. I strongly recommend it. If you are interested in watching food shows, we were laughing the other day because pretty much all of my Netflix queue is like some silly movies and then like food show about a chef, food documentary. So I've got that like category down on Netflix. Let's see. What else do we want to do? I have so many things today and I'm kind of just not even sure how to split them up. I also have some clips from like Julia Child. I found a really interesting clip from a show I never knew existed, the host of which is Joyce Chen, and she was a host of a food show in the 60s in America covering how to make Chinese food. And one of the things that she was making was, they called it like, I don't know, Szechuan ravioli or something. She was making dumplings, but they named it Peking ravioli, even though it was basically gyoza. They like Americanized it for some reason, which is Italian, and called it ravioli. So I don't know. I might share that later. I will definitely post the clip for you on reciprocityradio.com. It's very beautiful to watch her demonstrate how to hand roll the wrappers for gyoza. So anyway, okay, where are we gonna go next? Let's see. I have another article that is 10 tips for pasta, but I think what we're gonna play first is this clip from, here we go, where did it go? I lost it. Oh no, where did it go? Here it is. Okay, so here's something I didn't know, but maybe you know. Sophia Loren, the Italian actress, who you may or may not have seen in Italian places everywhere, usually it's a photograph of an incredibly gorgeous woman eating a giant plate of spaghetti. That may be like how you've encountered her imagery, but I didn't know this until today. Sophia Loren was a cookbook author also, so I'm going to look into this. I don't know if they published them in America or not, but I found a video of her son making her favorite dish, which is also my favorite pasta dish, which is pasta alla vongole, or pasta with clams. So I'm excited to play this for you, and I hope I can learn from this and maybe get brave enough to make it at home, because winter is actually a really good time for seafood and shellfish, so that would be something really nice to make. And it's one of those things like aglio olio that is like, it's incredibly simple. I think there's like five ingredients and It's just such a divine thing. So here's a clip of this. We'll hear from Carlo Ponti, Sofia Loren's son, and it's from a show called Lydia Celebrates America that originally aired on PBS. So here's that clip for you now.
You come back from you.
Carlo says his mother, Sofia Loren, was a fabulous cook. So when Carlo arrived in New York, we decided to make pasta together in honor of his mother.
My mother is a wonderful cook, as you know. She published several cookbooks.
Yes.
But in her family, her mother, Romilda, was a fantastic cook, and her sister, Maria, is a fantastic cook. So there's a lineage of great cooks from her mother's side. Spaghetti con le vongole is my mother's favorite dish.
There's many foods that were a staple of my youth. Most of all was homemade pasta. It's kind of like an ingrained thing, like music. If you grow up with a musician, automatically maybe you might not choose it to make it your profession, but you know about music. It's been around you all your life. And it's the same thing with Italians, with cooking. I've seen my mother cook. I've seen her sister cook. So cooking was always very much intertwined with the daily activities.
So one of the best things about this pasta with clams is really simple dish. You need just few ingredients. We need some clams, and of course in Italy, if you were in Italy, we use vongole veraci. Here we have some Manila clams. They look like vongole veraci, and then we have some of local clams, little necks for flavor. They're a little sharper on the flavor. Garlic, peperoncino, parsley, olive oil, nothing else.
Totally.
The other things we do is we finish to cook the pasta in here, so they absorb a little bit the juice of the clams. So let's get it out now and we cook it here.
The pasta raw, almost.
So we can start to cook now the pasta a little bit here on this juice.
Al darli un'opera d'arte queste qua,
Esatto. Here we start to put now some of our condiments. We put all the little parsley.
Si fanno addirittura con le... Si mette fuori la pasta e si cucina tutto insieme.
Si assorba. Pasta takes in, absorbs...
That's right. Mamma, che opera d'arte.
So here, go in there. You're used
Come
to
si fa?
Having... That's it. Just like, make believe you have a whole orchestra in front of you here.
It's dangerous. I'm going to put it everywhere.
You conduct some music here. That's it. Go ahead, the two of you. I'm going to watch here.
Yeah, lovely.
In
this moment in time, this immortalizes this moment of me having the best pasta and vongole ever.
Se veramente la vuoi assaggiare qua dove c'è il main.
Was Sofia Loren's son, Carlo Ponti, making pasta alla vongole, basically linguine with clams, and like parsley and lemon. It is one of my favorite things in the world, so I was happy to find that clip. I did check, and Sofia Loren's cookbooks are available in English, so that is something you could look into, and I will definitely look into. I have a number of really fun celebrity cookbooks at this point, so I would love to read her recipes and watch her cook. Maybe there's clips of that too. So I guess, let's see here. I think I was in Fort Myers, but I could be wrong. That's where I grew up in Florida. And I somehow acquired two different books. I think they're two different places and times, but I have them both. I have like maybe original copies or original pressings of James Beard on pasta and James Beard on bread. And if you know who he is, there's food awards named after him. So I have these really beautiful books. And I think I got one at an antique bookstore in Florida, and the other I'm not really sure, but somehow I own them both. They both have the same like sort of cover design. And they're both basically encyclopedias on their own subjects. So bread book is just marvelous. And I've been really wanting to make bread, but I think that the pasta is like my little like sort of step, like dipping my toe in going towards bread, because it's obviously a lot more manageable than making bread. But I wanted to read to you the introduction from this book, and his is the recipe that I did initially go with when I began cooking, which was such a pleasure to find this book that I had picked up, you know, years ago and have it be so useful to me. And it's a really great book, too, because, as you'll see, he says he really didn't eat Italian initially. His idea of noodles was like Chinese takeout or Szechuan. So I really love that the book is not just Italian at all. It's about all types of noodles, and that's really wonderful, in my opinion. It's nice to see so many types of things. Like, I, for one, learned how to make spatzel from this, and I had no idea what that was before, so it's pretty fascinating. There's the introduction from Beard on Pasta. This is a book of good times to have with pasta. I never get tired of pasta any more than I get tired of bread. I eat it when I'm exhausted and want a quick meal that will give me a lift. I eat it when I'm in an ambitious mood, looking for something pleasant, indifferent to compliment a guest. When I want something spicy, I toss spaghetti with warm olive oil, garlic, and anchovies. When I want something voluptuous, I bake elbow macaroni in a cheese-rich bechamel sauce. And when I'm fed up with complicated foods, I'll fill a bowl with piping hot green noodles and cover them with icy tomatoes and scallions and a sharp vinaigrette. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I'm having allergies. I'm always having allergies. The seasons love me. I'm so sorry. I forgot. Oh yeah, mi dispiace. But coughing on the mic here. Pasta is always the same, yet always different. It has a comforting familiarity with its pale golden color and chewy wheaten taste. And then there are those amusing shapes and the thousands of ways to sauce them, from avocado to zucchini or plain butter and cheese to a puree of frog's legs. It's always different because we find pasta recipes in nearly every country of the world. I should say right at the start of this that this isn't an Italian cookbook. It's a collection of worldwide noodle dishes that I like and like to make. There are Italian recipes in it. There are also dishes from Germany, France, China, and Greece. There are kosher-style noodle puddings and English macaroni desserts. In my own life, pasta didn't begin as an Italian food at all. I must have been 6 or 7 before I ever ate spaghetti, but I was eating Chinese noodles long before that. They were given to me by Let, the Chinese chef who worked for my mother. He used to make a soup that was rather weak chicken stock, absolutely full of noodles, ham, scallions, and thin strips of eggs that he would beaten up and then cooked into a thin pancake and sliced into little strips. We went fairly often to Chinese restaurants in Portland, and I loved the chow mein and fried noodles. It was nothing like the chow mein on beds of crisp little twigs that you get now. It was more like lo mein, and the noodles were boiled and then quickly fried so that they were brown and crispy on the bottom, and they were covered with shredded vegetables and cubes of tofu. I didn't have Italian noodles until I was in school, when we started to go to a pretty good Italian restaurant that served family-style meals at great long tables. They bring this little antipasto and then a dish of pasta. The menu never varied, and it was always 50 cents. They made a good tomato sauce with butter and fresh herbs and a version of carbonara. And the sauces were nothing complicated, but it was great fun. And I just loved it. After all, what can you do for 50 cents? Oddly enough, when I began to cook pasta for myself, it was in the German style. This was because my mother had close friends who were from a German family, and they used noodles a lot in soup with stews. They had one wonderful dish for which they took all the lesser parts of the pig, the backbone, the tail, and such, and braised them and served them with sauerkraut noodles. That was fun. And the point of all these reminiscences is to show how, even in small American cities at the beginning of this century, there were several quite distinct traditions of cooking with pasta. I don't know where the historians will eventually tell us pasta started. I'm sure, however, that the old romantic notion that Marco Polo came back to Venice from China toting a secret bag of spaghetti has pretty much been debunked. My guess is that we will never find a starting place for pasta, because it will turn out to have popped up in several different places, all quite independent of one another, and then to have been carried along the trade by routes of camels, ships, and peddlers' packs. You just have to look at rice noodles and mung bean noodles to see that the Oriental tradition is quite separate from ours, or to consider that the very early Bulgarian pasta, lumps of dried dough that horsemen carried in their saddlebags and grated into pots of boiling milk at the end of the day's ride, were quite different. We do know that there is a long history around the Eastern Mediterranean of simply making simple wheat doughs for boiling. We know that noodles have been sold in Greece as early as the 5th century. Pasta in Italy probably started in the south as part of a whole Mediterranean culture. We know that Romans grew wheat in Sicily, but what better and what better way to preserve wheat flour than to make it into a paste and dry it? Yet the first Italian references to pasta are terribly offhanded. A legal document mentions that someone inherited a basket of macaroni, or a sieve for draining noodles, or a saint's legend tells of how the devil was foiled in his scheme to fill a virtuous man's pasta dish with dirt. It seems that the saint was present at the meal. A saint was present at the meal, and when he said the blessing over the food, the dirt was transformed into sweet ricotta, and everyone enjoyed a good dinner. What a wonderfully Italian miracle that one was. It's just because pasta is part of the cooking of so many different cultures that we don't have to feel bound by the rules of any one country when we cook it. That's why I've made no attempt in this book to be particularly classical or traditional. My aim here is, as in all of my books and teachings, to encourage pleasure and individual taste in the way that we eat. Of course, there are well-established rules in Italy about the right way to serve and eat pasta. There are customs that have grown out of centuries of experience, and they have the authority of a lot of good eating behind them. In the question of matching pasta to sauce, for example, the Italians can be very specific. Marcella Hazan says to use thin spaghetti for seafood sauces, regular spaghetti for cream sauces. And Giuliano Bugiali says that you should try always to serve pesto sauce on tornetti or a flat and narrow noodle. But we're Americans with a whole melting pot of cultures behind us, and we don't have to do things the classic Italian way. We can do things as we please. We pick the pasta to go with the sauce, we feel free to experiment, discover what appeals to us. Once we've chosen our sauce, we try to imagine how it will taste, what pasta will go well with what, and will it take on a chewy ziti or a delicate angel hair or a rice-like orzo? We may find eventually that certain pastas seem right with certain sauces. Tubular shapes like penne and envelope shapes like seashells seem right when the sauce's tiny bits of meat or fish should be caught in the spaces. Then that fine slender noodle seems proper with thin tomato sauces that we want a good chewy twist to stand up to a cold pasta salad full of cheese and broccoli. But you shouldn't take this on anyone's authority, least of all mine. Instead, consult your own taste and style. Feel free to experiment, take chances. We Americans have been intimidated for too long by other people's opinions on what we should eat. We've been more intimidated, I think, in the area of table manners and propriety. Pasta is not a mannerly food to eat, and I remember when my hostess in this country were so insecure and etiquette conscious that they would break the noodles into inch-long pieces before they cooked them. They would choose elbow macaroni over spaghetti so that their guests wouldn't risk the crime of slurping at the table. I think we've gotten over that kind of tea room niceness, but now is another worry people have about eating pasta, which is not doing things in the proper Italian way. The worry about whether Italians use bowls or plates, whether it is proper to serve a soup spoon along with a fork as help in picking up the strands, and how to avoid slurping up the last inches of noodles. To which I say that it's time to stop worrying and start enjoying. Shallow bowls are nice to have, they make it easier to pick up the pasta, but if you don't have them, plates are fine. Remember that the Chinese hold a small bowl under their chins and shovel the noodles into their mouths with chopsticks. Do you serve a spoon alongside your spaghetti? Italians say that for children, the infirm or ill-mannered use soup spoons as prongs for their forks when picking up pasta. I think spoons serve a more important function, that of getting the sauce left out of the bottom of the bowl. Now, I've often wiped up the last servable puddle of garlic and oil with a crust of bread, which was good if a starchy solution. But if you have a soup spoon, you can capture that last cream-covered pea and prosciutto, the last basil-flavored tomato sauce, or capers and olive oil from the bottom of the bowl. As for picking up the pasta, use a spoon if it helps. The Italians have perfected the technique of picking up long noodles with a fork. They stick the fork into the mass of pasta and twirl it around one or two times until they have a neat amount of pasta wrapped around the tines. One warning, experienced eaters are careful to start with just a few strands of noodles on their forks, or else they will wind up with a package that is larger than their mouths can accommodate. How do you deal with short strands that are left hanging from your mouth? Without embarrassment, certainly. It's bound to happen when spaghetti is cooked just right, because only overcooked pasta is soft and pliable enough to form a tidy package around the fork. A few luscious strands are bound to hang loose and must be taken into the mouth as skillfully as possible. If you slurp them, so be it, because the only classical way and true way to eat pasta is with gusto. So that is James Beard on pasta in general. It's the foreword to his book, Beard on Pasta, which is really wonderful. And has so many wonderful things. I just really am excited. It's so much, so many things. Pasta, avocado pasta, onion sauce, fresh sauce, lots of vegetable sauces, lots of different types of variations of pasta, including how to make like a spätzle, which is like a dough you literally grate over boiling water, which is so fascinating to me. I would love to try that in the future. So, whew, that was quite a bit of reading. Having all the allergy-related issues that people have, like itchy eyes and a dry throat, but that's okay. At least it's a nice, cozy kind of weather, so it is kind of the perfect time to have this like warm bowl of something. So I hope you've enjoyed the pasta content that I've had today. I wanted to go over briefly, and there will be so much more coming this week. I know I always say that, but I really have a lot. I really have a lot coming for you guys on the website, and I hope you will check it out at reciprocityradio.com. There are several pasta recipes on this website, and a lot of them are very, very, very manageable and even only a few ingredients. So I have 3-ingredient mac and cheese, which is super easy and fun. And once you get the hang of that one, it's very easy to just like make it without even measuring anything. I've made that for lunch with like some vegetables on the side a lot. Franny's pasta fra diavolo, which is one of my all-time favorite tomato sauces. It is spicy. It is delicious. It will make your house smell incredible. Marcella Hazan's 3-ingredient tomato sauce is a great place to start if you're nervous. This is another one that is alarmingly, like, just a gorgeous thing to eat and make. And it's just, it's perfect. You can't mess it up, and you will be shocked at how good it is. I have lemon and cacio e pepe, which is delicious. Just a variation of cacio e pepe with lemon. I love lemon, so I tend to put lemon zest in a lot of things that maybe don't call for it. And I also have a sausage and kale pasta recipe up, which is really good and hearty and delicious. And then tallarinas verdes, or like a spinach pesto with a fresh cheese. It is super good and easy, and you can make it in the blender. I made that this week too. It was awesome. So coming up, I will have for you some various recipes that I've made this week. I made lots of ravioli and agnolotti, and I shot videos of that and pictures, so that will be coming to show you how to make these really simple folds and make stuff pasta, not be a completely like nerve-wracking, frustrating thing. The agnolotti fold is super simple and easy to fill and easy to roll out, so it's a really simple way of making a stuffed pasta, and it cooks up beautifully. I made 3 types of fillings. I made a pumpkin filling with Parmesan, some breadcrumbs. I had cooked the pumpkin down a little bit so there wasn't a ton of water in it. And I also made a beet and ricotta filling. With that, I actually had the addition of goat cheese. And I served that in like a butter, lemon, and poppy seed sauce. It was absolutely amazing. And I also made a ricotta and spinach filling. And that one I sort of just hacked together, but it was so tasty. There's another recipe. 2 of these things that I made are really actually kind of inspired by a restaurant in my neighborhood, which is called Al Dila, and they have a beet ravioli on the menu. It is finished with poppy seeds. I was very inspired by that, and I wanted to recreate it, so I attempted that. I think I did pretty good. It wasn't exactly the same, but it was very delicious. And then they also have this wonderful dish that they have. I think it's called malformati. It's sort of like a ricotta, and like I think they use Swiss chard. But you can use different things. Actually, James Beard in this book has the recipe for this. You can use any kind of green that you can cook down, and ricotta, and you basically make like a kind of a gnocchi, kind of a dumpling with the spinach or greens, cooked down greens that you've drained, and your ricotta and a little bit of flour and egg will bind it together, and you kind of make this little soft quenelle, and when you cook it in boiling water, it becomes this cloud-like, incredible dumpling. They're so good. So that's something I'm going to work on and put on the blog. I've done it before at my home. I just did not write down when I did it the last time I did it. But it is super easy and fun to make, especially if you like look in your fridge and you see that you have like a soft cheese like ricotta around and like some greens you need to cook up. That's a great one, and you can probably infuse all kinds of fun flavors. So you can look forward to that on reciprocityradio.com. I know this is a radio show, but I really do want to get you guys to cook. And I love to hear from people who've tried recipes If you have suggestions, I would love to hear from that too. There is a whole part of my website where you can contact me. There's a form. I also have Twitter. It's at ReciprocityRFB. So, you know, any way, any means of reaching out, go for it. I love hearing when people have made things that I've posted. So I'd love to hear from you if you're out there and you're like, she talks about pasta for an hour. I guess I have to make it now. I would love to hear from you and hear about your pasta adventures, favorite things to make. I'm really still on a roll. I think I'm going to, like, I don't think I have any more freezer space, but if I could keep cooking, I would do it. So, let's see. Okay, so I have this thing from time.com, and we'll finish up with this because I have to go soon, and I've been talking for an hour about pasta. I guess I should add an addendum. I know I gave you some tips at the top of the hour that were on reciprocityradio.com in the blog section. Those are pretty great. But yeah, don't get frustrated. Like, every single thing that I've made successfully, I've failed at making several times before. That is my number one tip. Don't get frustrated. There are some things that are very simple out there, like gacio e pepe. It is actually very easy to mess up because it's that simple. And even I mess it up. And if you don't serve it immediately, it's going to congeal and taste terrible. So things are going to happen, but the whole thing is practice makes perfect. It's fun. I want you to have fun and make pasta for fun. Make it with your friends, or your family, or your loved ones. It's a really fun thing to do. Or just make it for yourself. That's what I've been doing. So this is an article from time.com, and it is 9 ways you ruin your pasta from an expert chef. And this is not even about making it. This is about just cooking the stuff from the box. But I think it's worth sharing because even if you don't want to make pasta from scratch, you can improve what you're doing at home. Make your world better. Open up a new way of thinking. So this is from in 2017, Italy landed number 1 spot on the Bloomberg Global Health Index. Eating all that pasta apparently pays off. I actually do feel kind of better this week, by the way, after like eating only things that I've made. I do feel a little different, and I do feel good. It's kind of weird, something I've been noticing. Anyway, if there's a chef in the U.S. you can offer advice on the subject, it's Missy Robbins of Lilia in Brooklyn's Williamsburg neighborhood. Bloomberg pronounced the restaurant a pasta destination in 2016 after it opened. It's earned praise from David Solomon, Goldman Sachs, Chief Executive Officer, and has lured Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump. I did not need to know that. As Robbins has mastered the art of pasta cooking, she's become militant about the steps that go into creating a perfect bowl of the stuff. So here's her advice to you on what may be going wrong when you do it. First thing is, you use too small of a pot. Even if it looks way too big, get a large pot. And add more water than you think you need. There should be enough space for the pasta to move around so it cooks evenly in the water, that it's at a rolling boil pretty much constantly. If it looks like your pasta is crammed in a hot tub or a bathtub of simmering water, you are too skimpy on your pasta pot and water. And remember that the water should be heavily salted. You add oil, number 2 that you're doing wrong, adding oil to the cooking water. Here's the reason why. It prevents the sauce from sticking to the pasta. It's basically like adding a raincoat to whatever shape you're using, which is not what you want in a finished dish. So do not put oil in your pasta. Even really great, even authorities on cooking say to do this. Don't do it. You're wasting oil. You don't need to. Just don't. Definitely salt your water. You grab a colander. That's a mistake. If you're draining pasta in a colander in the sink, you're losing a lot of the cooking water. And all that cooking water is an important ingredient for a great dish, especially finishing and making a sauce bind to your pasta. That's extremely important when you finish you always finish your pasta in the sauce. Some pots have a basket insert. I personally have like a colander scoop that I use, and I just like scoop it in to my dish so that the water gets in there too. But you can also buy a separate colander. So don't drain your pasta completely out and like shake all the water out. Or if you do want to drain your pasta out, you can always, I use a Pyrex, like a full cup measure Pyrex to scoop out some water, and I always reserve it on the side just in case. So that's always something you can do as well. The water will contain starch and flavor that helps bind ingredients in the sauce. It is the key ingredient in the 3-ingredient mac and cheese because the starch in the water actually binds the cheese into a sauce. It's this is how cacio e pepe also works. It's like a, it creates a binding kind of thing. Let's see, what else? You pour your sauce on the top. I don't even want to talk about this because it's disgusting. If you sauce your pasta, if you just pour the sauce on plain pasta, just stop. Don't make pasta ever again. That's horrible. You should always finish, always cook your pasta in the sauce so that it has a chance to absorb the flavor, meld with it, impart the starches, like give it structure. Always, even if you're making like a jar, even if you're making Velveeta, just promise me you'll cook the pasta in the sauce. Please, you just do it. You use too much sauce. If you don't want your pasta, if you don't want your pasta that you've cooked so carefully to be swimming in a pool of sauce, no matter how tasty that sauce is, I am one to agree. You believe pasta belongs on a plate. That's a mistake. I use bowls to serve almost all pasta, from long strands of spaghetti to fettuccine to malfadini to short shapes like rigatoni and gnocchi. It's just more comfortable in a bowl. It nestles easier. Let's see. The last two are, you think pasta is just for cold weather. Not all pasta sauces need to simmer. Case in point, one of my favorite recipes in the book is a no-cooked cherry tomato sauce, which works anytime you've got little decent tomatoes. If you like garlic, spring is the best time to make sauce with it. Use garlic, the scapes of garlic, and regular garlic. A celebration of garlic. So you can add really fresh things. You don't have to have this big, heavy, hot thing. You can have a nice dish with spring vegetables. And the final thing is, you throw out the leftovers. Almost any leftover pasta, with the exception of stuffed ones, can have a second life as a delicious frittata or a baked dish. Add a few beaten eggs, grated cheese, and other ingredients, and cook it at about 350 in a baking dish or heat-proof skillet, and you will have a wonderful pasta frittata. It is one of the most satisfying things, especially if you're like groggy in the morning. It's so good. So, those are tips from time.com. I hope you will make pasta after you listening to me talk about it for an hour. This is Amanda from Reciprocity Radio. I'm here every single Sunday at 5, live on Radio Free Brooklyn, talking about recipes, talking about cooking, talking about drinking and eating and sharing and all that other stuff. So if you like what you heard, please check out reciprocityradio.com. You can find previous episodes. You can find recipes. You can find tips, tricks, the blog, all of that stuff. If you like what you hear in general on Radio Free Brooklyn, please consider donating. We are a nonprofit, so your donation is tax deductible, and we are volunteer based and very community oriented. So please check us out, and you can sign up if you want to know more about what's going on here on the Radio Free Brooklyn newsletter, which is on radiofreebrooklyn.org/newsletter. So check that out. You will find out all the events and things. We have lots of concerts, showcases, parties. We have mixers where you can meet us. We have a lot of fun here. So check out all the events on radiofreebrooklyn.com or .org. And yeah, if you donate, it's tax deductible, and you can get some pretty cool Radio Free Brooklyn gear. So I hope you'll think about doing that. Thank you for listening to me. I will be back next Sunday here on Radio Free Brooklyn at 5. And yeah, check out reciprocityradio.com. Make some pasta.